Welcome to the Smart Family Podcast, where we want to help you love being home. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rob Meter and Tony Newhoff.
Hey, parents, have you ever wondered how your conflict or your fighting in your marriage may be impacting your kids?
Yeah, absolutely. Or perhaps it's not so much a heated confrontation. Maybe it's just the cold shoulder or ignoring or not even really listening to your kids or your partner. I mean, how do you manage that, especially when there are children around? How do you manage conflict and confrontation in a family situation when the kids are listening?
Yeah, great question. Mm-hmm. It's an issue that I heard over and over in my family law practice, Rob. Yeah. And there are definitely better and worse ways to handle conflict.
Absolutely. I mean, it can be a very traumatic experience for a child to listen to their parents arguing. And I think it's going to be a great conversation today where we talk about how to do this in a more healthy and productive way.
Sure. Yeah, because we don't want to shield our kids from all conflict. I think the key is we want it to be healthy conflict.
Right.
But we don't necessarily get that modeling. Like, for example, in my home while I was growing up, you know, there were definitely heated arguments, but sometimes not enough listening going on.
Right.
And how about for you?
Well, I mean, I'm happy to say that I was in a largely very functional family, but you know, when there was conflict or confrontation, we tended to be conflict avoidant. You know, we tended to kind of sweep it under the rug and waited for time to sort of melt away some of those rough edges. I'm not sure if that was a very healthy way of dealing with conflict and confrontation either.
Right. Well, I'm so excited today to talk to Lisa Ems Weiss. Mm-hmm. She has a background in policing way back, but she has been a mediator for years and years, and she works with couples primarily, couples who are going through separation, but also couples who are married. And her specialty is helping people to listen to each other and getting underneath the positions that can come up in a fight and getting down to the deeper questions of why and questions of value. And she has gold for people on this whole topic of how to do conflict in a healthy way.
Awesome. I think this is going to be so helpful, Tony. Let's listen into our conversation with Lisa Ems Weiss.
Hello and welcome, Lisa, to our podcast today. Thanks for talking with us.
Thanks you for inviting me.
Well, Lisa, let's jump right in. We know that every family has conflict. That's a given. And today we want to focus on how families can do conflict in a healthy way, because we know how important it is for kids to be emotionally safe at home. So just wondering if you could share your thoughts on how parents can steer their conflict in a healthy direction.
Yes, I think it's something that every family, as you mentioned, has conflict. I find in the years of mediation that the conflict all stems from communication. And how do we have parents understand their communication styles? And how do we have parents actually start to communicate just about that topic? I find parents don't understand each other's communication styles when I see them. And the conflict rises from that. If you have someone who's a processor and you have someone who's a talker, the talker just gets louder and the processor withdraws and they're not part of that conversation any longer. If you add a child to that and they're hearing that conflict, then the child's trying to pick which side is correct. How do we have parents to understand that if they in fact can communicate in a way that makes sense to both of them, that some of this conflict can be minimized?
Great. Lisa, I'm just wondering if you have this couple who start to understand that one of them is a processor and one of them is a talker, and let's say they slow down enough to try to rein in their style, so to speak, then what would you tell them is the next step?
Conflict starts with communication, but where I find the argument with parents is they're trying to show the other parent they're correct. Parents always seem to need a win-win as opposed to being able to compromise. And so when we have parents that start the argument, they're getting louder because what they're trying to do is show the other party that they're correct. And instead of saying, you know, I hear what you're saying, but I don't agree. to accept the fact that there are two different opinions and there's nothing wrong with that. Saying it out loud and saying, that's your opinion, this is mine. So now what do? How do we compromise? How do we find something that will work for both of us?
Yeah, great question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what? How do we then avoid kids getting caught in the middle of this? Because that's what's something that I see in a clinical setting regularly. I see parents who have conflict. And this could be before separation or after separation. Mm-hmm. Like we just said, everybody's going to have conflict to some extent.
Right.
But the kids know about it. You know, as much as we try to shield them from it, they seem to sense there's something going on here.
Absolutely.
There's some stress going on in this house that I am aware of. How do we minimize the impact on kids maybe the question should be, how can we actually turn this around to be a healthy lesson in conflict resolution for kids?
There isn't any families I don't see that are in conflict, number one. And I, with all the years experience I've had in meeting with children, there isn't a child who doesn't feel like they're caught in the middle. And that can be in an attacked family and that can be in a separated family. Children feel conflict more than they hear conflict. And I don't think parents understand that. Mm-hmm. I'll ask parents, how are your children coping with this separation? For example, oh, they're fine. They're doing well at school and everything's okay. And I just want to say no. No, they're not okay. And so how do we bring that so that the conflict is between two parents to settle issues and not bring that child into the middle of it. Try not to manipulate one side or the other. Try not to bring them onto your side and give them all of the facts, all of the information, and hope that you're going to win them over. Children should not be involved in that. Children should see healthy conflict being resolved because I think that's how they learn. And so you can go to a child and say, this is my opinion and this is dad's opinion. And you can see we don't agree, but we've made a compromise because you're the most important person and we love and support you. Here's what we have in fact compromised for, and here's what we'd like to present to you. It's that piece of showing a child that it's okay to have different opinions. There has to be some kind of a compromise that comes out of that. And I think that's healthy for children to see and to understand.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, I'm curious about when you have parents who, as you said, are trying to convince the other parent that their viewpoint is the better viewpoint. Sometimes it can become sort of a binary proposition where there's two positions. But how do you encourage parents to be more creative in their problem solving?
In problem solving. When parents come and they're stuck on a position, and that doesn't matter whether it's in marital mediation or separation mediation, they're stuck on a position and they want the other party to hear them and believe in them and therefore want them to agree with them. It's allowing each party to understand that the positions are great. There's not a negative piece in that. And so now show me what your position is. Tell me in your own words what your position is. And now have the other party, often what I'll do is mirroring or echoing, and have the other party repeat what they thought they heard that other person say. And often they don't have a grasp on it. They're only hearing the words. They're not hearing to understand. And so how do I get parents to start to understand what the other party is starting to say? There's assumptions and there's a background and, you know, there's a past. And that comes forward, not hearing the words that person is actually bringing forth. And so how do we get them to come back onto that same page? How do I paraphrase or reframe, and how in fact do I get parents to in fact echo or mirror each other so that I understand that they're on that same page? And that helps tremendously because then all of a sudden there's an acknowledgement that they have not heard or they assumed something had to happen. And that gives parents a great opportunity to come back to the core and start to look at what it was that they were trying to achieve.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, in your role, you see families and parents kind of at the height of conflict, I would say, but I'm sure you sit there sometimes and think, man, if I only could have said something or been on the scene a few years earlier, because one thing that I noticed too is that, you know, there's a time of separation, but usually the conflict proceeds at sometimes by years, if not longer.
Yep.
And if there was something that you could say to couples before they even got married, let's say there was premarital counseling and you happen to be invited to that, is there anything that you would say to them at that stage to say, hey, you know, this would help get into a situation where conflict can be resolved in a healthy way?
Yeah, I strongly believe that anybody who becomes a parent needs to have a course in communication, but that will never happen. However, I think the piece for me is when couples come together, they're so in love that some of the issues just aren't spoken about. And one of them is communication styles. And so, you know, if I talk to some clients and take them back to when they first got married or in marital mediation, it's about, do you know the other person's style? Mm-hmm. How do they communicate? Are they a talker or are they a processor? Can you get an immediate conversation? Is there a different way or a better way to communicate? Some people communicate much better if they put it in writing. Some people, right. There's just options, but you need to understand that. And so I need space. And to be able to say that without the other person getting defensive is all about in the beginning. And so I really, really push for young couples to start to look at what their styles are and acknowledge that it doesn't need to be defensive when someone says something in particular, you're not hearing me, or I need space, or I need time. Because I think if we're not looking at it, that's what elevates conflict.
Right. So, Rob, you have a pediatrics practice that involves mental health and is focused on mental health patients. You see children who have been impacted by their parents' conflict. So sure. What do you see in your practice?
Yeah, well, I mean, as a pediatrician, and we've alluded to this already, I often feel like I see kids who are caught in the middle. And, you know, sometimes it's not as obvious at the beginning. Sometimes it can kind of be glossed over. And as Lisa was saying, sometimes the outward message can be, oh, everything is amicable and everything is fine. But then when you really start to dig down deeper into the why are we here today, stomach aches and headaches and school avoidance and separation anxiety, sometimes regression in development or behavior. And you realize that the kids are being caught in the middle and or they're being manipulated by one parent or the other. And sometimes only one parent is there and they're talking about the other parent. And you're like, well, that's, you know, we have to be careful how we talk in front of the kids because it's sometimes in very disparaging words and terms. And you say, oh, that can't be good, you know, and just kind of hearing that one side, what's the other side? And I feel like sometimes I'm being caught in the middle too, you know, or I'm being manipulated. And now I feel that way. Mm. How much more so must that child feel that as well? And then, of course, then that ties into why are they here? Well, some of those symptoms are caused by stress, and that could very well be the stress that's happening in the home. And so, I wish I knew more about what was happening in that situation, right? Because Lisa, because how can parents avoid manipulating their children or really using their kids as pawns in this situation? Mm-hmm. You know, that would be sort of the worst case scenario.
It is the worst case scenario, but I think parents should even just back up and look at the fact that just conflict alone can cause anxiety for children. Mm-hmm. There's an acknowledgement that kids love both parents. And when one person is speaking badly or putting the other parent down, that they're part of you. Mm-hmm. And that child feels that.
They're almost asking the kid to make a choice.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, do you love me or do you love your dad more? Mm-hmm. Do you love me or do you want your mom to do this? There's that acknowledgement that the child is part of their conflict and they should be the furthest thing away from their conflict. I'd love to be able to say to every parent, there should never be an argument in front of children. That's never going to happen. But if there is an argument in front of children, apologize. Nobody goes to the next step. They don't call the child back and say, I'm so sorry you heard that. You know, that was unfair. That was a discussion between your mother and I, and we should not have done that in front of you. There's an acknowledgement then that it's not the child's fault. It's their fault. But parents don't do that next step. They're right. So angry at each other that then they don't follow through with that. And now the child gets all of that.
And I think sometimes too, it's the parents themselves have learned that from their own childhood experience. And now it's the same messages being fed forward to their own children who are just going to repeat this cycle again.
Yeah.
And so are you sure then, Lisa, we can't mandate like, you know, premarital counseling?
I wish.
All right.
Communication skills training in high schools.
Yes.
Well, actually, maybe there's something there. Maybe we should do something.
In a mandatory class. I really do. There's, you know, I'll speak to university or college students and, you know, I ask a simple question, who's ever been caught in the middle of conflict in your family? And I think, you know, 90% of the hands go up, and that's intact and it's separated families. The children all feel it. It doesn't matter how old they are. I mean, I can speak to friends whose parents separated when they were in their 20s and 30s and they still felt that they were caught in the middle.
Right.
I don't think parents with the emotional distraught that they have realize it. And I get it. There's a lot of emotion that's attached. And when their glass isn't half empty, it's absolutely empty. The last thing that's on their mind is to think about where the children are at unless they're acting out.
Yeah. Lisa, how do you think this affects kids at different ages?
Yeah.
You know, I think the literature says that children who are younger tend to feel this much differently and much more deeply than children who are older. What difference do you see in kids who are in elementary school versus high school?
Yeah, I think elementary school, they're not sure what to do with the pain. They're not sure what to do with the sadness and the hurt that they're feeling from both parents. I find regression in younger children, but I also see kids who act out. And the acting out is, in some ways, attention-seeking. But not knowing what to do with the emotions that they're feeling. And I, you know, in our schools, when kids act out, there's, you know, quick judgment about that child as opposed to what is happening in the home. And I get that our teachers don't have time to figure all of that out, but I think we're quick to judge as opposed to thinking what is happening at home and what is this child actually feeling and taking from it. I find in teenagers, they tend to stick with one parent. Sometimes it's a lenient parent, but not always. It's just who makes more sense. Teenagers have to figure out who's right or wrong. And when they determine who's right or wrong, then that's who they stick with. And it's really difficult for the other parent. And so we'll often have the opposite parent saying, yeah, but you know, dad's stopping them from seeing me or mom's stopping them from doing something. And it's not the dad or the mom, it's the child. And give them some space, because in another year or two, they're going to come through that and they're going to be just fine. And you're going to have just as much time with them, but they need to know that, that somebody is right and wrong. And that's a real issue for them.
And just kind of picking up on something you said just a minute ago with the younger kids. I mean, if it's one thing that I've come to know too, is that when there's behavior in kids, there's almost always a backstory to that.
Absolutely. And
sometimes what we identify as being, oh, this is the obvious trigger, we realize, no, wait a second, there's a backstory here that has been bubbling in the background for a long time.
Right.
And as we've talked about earlier too, sometimes this has been bubbling for a long time.
I agree.
Years sometimes. So.
And I think each child is different. I mean, as you would see as a pediatrician, some children are resistant. You know, so many studies of twins in same situation, and one twin is resilient and can move on and be very different, and another child takes it all very personal and very emotional. And there's no rhyme or reason. I mean, Dr. Peter Marshall would talk about the resilience that we're not sure. And so, again, we've got to be really careful not to lump all the children together. That's one of my major issues when parents separate, is they assume that all the children should go one direction and all the children should be the same in an access order, in a parenting time. And that's not the case. Sally and Johnny might need something totally different, and it's their emotional needs. And how do we get parents to look at that differently, to acknowledge that each one is different and each one is accepting it differently and each one needs help in a different way? And I don't think we do that well.
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. You said every parent has a different communication style. Every child must have a different communication style as well, and a different way of processing conflict. But I guess in the end, we just want it to happen in a healthy way. The resolution, that is, of the conflict.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I agree. And it starts with communication.
Yeah, well, you keep coming back to communication. And I feel like that's really, you know, one of the main concepts that would be so great to avoid the conflict or to mitigate, to minimize the conflict.
Absolutely. I don't think we ever will. I mean, conflict is what makes our society run. It's what, you know, what allows us to have wonderful discussions with each other. Mm-hmm. When we're having a discussion with each other, we're not trying to win the other party over to our side. That's when the argument happens. When I try to win you to my side and you're not either hearing or agreeing with me, then all of a sudden I'm getting louder and stronger. And how else can I paraphrase this so that you're going to come to my side? We need conflict. It's just how do we do it healthy? How do we actually acknowledge the conflict and then agree to disagree? And now how do we compromise?
Right. I'm sure in your practice, Lisa, you must come across parents who are conflict avoidant.
Yes.
And what advice do you give those parents to help them more comfortable with the concept of, that conflict is actually healthy if it's done in a healthy way?
I speak to all my parents with that. It's okay to have different opinions. They're surprised with that, which always baffles me. They assume that they have to believe in one or the other. And when I give them permission, if you will, to have a different opinion and to acknowledge that opinion and have the other parent acknowledge that opinion, that person who has been avoiding conflict as much as possible all of a sudden is heard. And it's a whole different feeling for them. You know, sometimes all of a sudden it's like I've just lit something and this person now has lots to say. Other times it's just an acknowledgement that thank you for hearing me.
Right.
And that's the piece that, you know, someone who is an avoidant processor never feels heard. And how do we bring that to the table? How do we acknowledge them in a different site?
Well, I usually just sweep things under the rug. Isn't that what we're supposed to do?
Yeah.
Nice try, Rob.
Yeah. You're not alone, though.
Just that rug gets really lumpy
and harder
to walk on every day.
That's for sure.
Well, yeah, absolutely. That is definitely not the best way to deal with it.
No, it's not. But it happens often.
I just delay the whole process.
You know, the mountain under the molehill, that little molehill under the rug, and then it just continues to grow. It doesn't seem to go away.
But isn't it an amazing thing we could teach our kids?
Oh.
If you think about it, you know, to teach them healthy conflict resolution skills, you know, this is what these kids are going to grow up to be, the peacemakers and the mediators.
Absolutely.
In the world. I mean, you are a professional mediator,
wow,
but shouldn't we all be mediators
Absolutely.
In our relationships?
Absolutely. And the sooner I think we can teach children skills on communication and conflict resolution, they'll start with their own peers. And it's a different feeling for them. The difficulty I find when we were doing a peer mediation program was they were doing really well peer-to-peer. But when they went home and discussed it with a parent, then one of the parents would say, well, why'd you do that? Or, how did that happen? I wouldn't have done that. And my point to the kids was, that's okay as long as you've opened up a conversation, as opposed to it being, you know, a decisive opinion and you will do it my way. But I think the sooner we can get to children on conflict resolution, schools, instead of demanding something or principals indicating what the consequence might be, how do they get the kids to start to look at their own consequences?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is part of the concept of collaborative problem solving.
Right.
And always, and this is what I always say to parents too, is, you know, if children and parents can come up with the solutions themselves, if it's something that they can own,
yes,
and feel responsible for and accountable to, that type of solution is much more likely to stick than one that's unilaterally imposed upon the other person.
Absolutely. They will follow through with it. If I threw back to my boys when they grow up, I don't know, what do you think the consequence would be? I swear that their consequences were much harsher than what I would have come up with. And there was an acknowledgement that they understand what's right and wrong, and they understand that there should be a consequence. But we don't tend to have the child part of that.
Right, or that have that back and forth, which is so healthy.
Yeah.
That's part of the communication, right?
Back
to communication.
I have a question for you, Lisa, about your role as a mediator. So I've heard you say before that you're the voice of the child in the room when you're working with parents. How does that work?
Again, when I see parents of separation, I'll say the emotions are so high. I'm going back through their hurt, their anger, their sadness, their frustration, whatever kind of emotion they're coming to the table. And so they're empty and they're trying to resolve. They're just going right over the child. And so often, some of my interns that will come in will hear me say, so Johnny's under the table. How do you think he just felt about that explosion that the two of you had? Tell me what Sally might think about the ideas that you guys have just come up with. Is there difference for Sally and Johnny as far as how that decision has just been made? And focusing them right back to the child. What I want is the healthiest child we can do. And so we've talked about, trying to picture three circles, if you will. And the center one is the child. And when we push those two outside circles close and tight, that child just does not have their own identity. They're doing everything that the parents are saying or telling them to do. And I need that to open up. I need the child to be as healthy as possible. And when I present that to parents, they start to look at, how do I make this child the healthiest that I can make? And that's my responsibility as a parent to do. And so what is it that we need to do? And how do we start to make those changes? And so the whole center of that whole mediation is just about the child. Forget the conflict. What works for the child? And how do I bring them just to looking at each child individually and what they need out of this?
Mm-hmm. That's great. I think we'll include a link to that diagram you talked about, okay. Lisa, with the circles, because it's a great visual just to show people how the child can be squeezed between the parents' conflict.
Yeah. And children relate to it too. When I see children in conflict of the separation, they see themselves and can identify that circle is me. Because I don't have a say and all I'm hearing is conflict and I feel like I'm caught in the middle and I really want to be that full circle. Mm-hmm. How do I get
right.
there?
You can imagine a child who feels squished like that. I mean, that constant state of stress and anxiety and how that would just bleed over into school and friendships and sibling relationships.
And their health.
And their physical health.
Physical and mental health. Yeah. It's huge, no matter what age. Trying to get parents just to understand that. And again, I understand parents when they're in conflict, the emotions are so high. But how do I take you off of that and bring you back to just thinking about your child at this moment?
That actually is a really good point, Lisa. What do you tell parents, or this could be Lisa or Rob, what do you tell parents when their emotions get the better of them? And even though they agree with you while they're in mediation that they want to contain their conflict in front of the child, but their emotions just seem to get out of control sometimes.
Mm-hmm. For me, Rob, you'll speak on that, but for me, it's acknowledging to the child. Don't put it under the rug. Acknowledge it and apologize to the child. I'm so sorry. You shouldn't have heard that. I didn't mean to explode. I didn't mean to do that. This has nothing to do with you. This is mine or your mom's or our argument or our disagreement and nothing to do with you. Instead, we tend not to do that. We don't apologize to our children for our outbursts or the arguments that they're hearing, for the explosions that we might even give to the child personally. Accept it. Take ownership. We're trying to be hard on the problem and not on the person. So how do you take ownership for that and apologize for what you've done? That speaks so loudly to a child when they then realize it wasn't their fault and it wasn't something they said or did. That's the piece that we miss often when we're in conflict.
Thank you. Yeah, Rob, do you have anything you see in your practice?
But I'll tell you this, what I do see families and conflict is obvious and elevated and the kids are stuck in the middle and they're looking to me for a medical solution and a medical answer. I already know up front that even the potential treatment is going to be sabotaged by one parent or the other as another tool in this conflict. And I say that right away. I said, listen, we can't really proceed anywhere from a medical perspective, even if there is a medical problem, because we're not in a collaborative, cooperative state here.
Yeah, we're not on the same page.
No, so we need to all get on the same page about what the issues are And if that means going to counseling or going to family therapy or going to see a mediator to work on some of these differences, and then we'll see what the issues are from a medical perspective. And 9 times out of 10, a lot of those medical issues tend to get better if they're caused by the stress that's inside the home. So that is something that I have to unfortunately say on numerous occasions.
Yeah, I totally would agree with that. I think every child reacts differently to conflict. And how do we get parents to acknowledge it? And to be fair, that you know, children going, if a separation is happening, and children going to dad's house might react very differently while they're under dad's care than they do in mom's care. And so when someone comes to the table and says, yeah, but at my house they're doing da-da-da-da-da-da, well, at my house they're not doing that, and so I don't know what your problem is. There's an acknowledgement that, okay, folks, there's two different, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Something is triggering them in one home and not the other, and it's probably a personality or whatever that might be with a parent. But it's back to that communication again. Dad, can you accept that when, you know, Johnny's at mom's house, it's different? And can you at least help with that? Can you understand what that is? And maybe you can help with Johnny with that. We tend not to be on that same page when we're in conflict.
Mm-hmm. And so, Lisa, I think we might find people listening to this podcast who realize almost unconsciously they've come into the situation where tension has just escalated gradually and notched up, and they now realize, oh my gosh, we didn't think about the kids in this situation. And here we are. What advice would you have for that parent or those parents to start to reverse that process and to really disentangle that? Mm-hmm. What's the next step that you feel that they should take?
Well, families are intact. It's got to be that, you know, I always talk about a family discussion, but it has to be involving the children, and it has to be being honest about that. You know that mom and dad have been having a lot of arguments lately, and we're so sorry that we've put you in the middle with that, and we're going to work on that. And we may be getting help with that. We may be going to therapy, counseling, marital mediation. We're going to work on that, and it's not your issue. But they have to be honest with the children about that situation. We accept the fact that we have been arguing that we're not getting along. I know you feel the tension. I know you know that without even words. Letting the children know that they're not just off the top. Children then start to take their own feelings. And when that conflict happens and they feel the tension, then they start to blame themselves. And that totally, it's about them. If I had only picked my shoes up, if I had only just done that, then they wouldn't have argued. Or if I hadn't gone to that whatever sports camp, then they wouldn't be fighting about finances. That's what kids are about. And so if we're not honest with them about what it is and start fresh, then you start to look at your own communication skills and start to work backwards. But children need to understand very clearly, if you're at that tight tension time, be honest about it and let them know it's not their fault.
Well, thank you, Lisa. I think if anything, we've showed that, well, all families have conflict.
All.
But if we open up the channels of communication, I think that's the first step to having this proceed in a more positive way for parents and for the children.
I agree.
Thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
We really appreciate your insight.
Thank you, Lisa. Oh, you're so welcome.
Well, once again, that was such great practical advice of really how to look at the issue of conflicts in a family situation and how to resolve those conflicts. I mean, we're going to have disagreements. We're going to have even arguments. But how do we resolve those in a healthy and productive way? I mean, Tony, more than once, I have had kids in my practice with certain behavioral and mental health issues, and then reflecting on the situation as a whole, realizing that the conflict in the family really had an impact in that presentation. And, you know, so you have to really look at the big picture sometimes to see what is leading to certain behaviors and issues in children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it would show up in my office too, Rob, of course. You know, being in the middle of a divorce is a stressful time for everyone. Tempers flare. you know, it's a tough time, but for parents who are married right now, and even if your marriage is struggling and you're wondering, well, does it really make a difference if we work on how we carry out our conflict? You know, if there's a chance that my marriage isn't going to survive, I would say absolutely it is worthwhile because you are going to be co-parents into the future. And so regardless of whether your marriage survives or doesn't, these skills will help protect your kids. So it's definitely worthwhile. Rob, we have a survey out, and I would love so much, any of you parents and listeners who caught this episode, I would love for you to text 55444 and put in the word family, and you will get a link to a survey where you can give us feedback on these podcasts. We are so eager to hear from you, and we'd love your honest feedback over how you like the episodes, what you think of the quality, what topics you'd like us to deal with in the future. And because we're here for you, we so want to hear your opinions. And we just ask that you would text 55444, the word family, and you'll get that link. And thanks so much for helping us out. We really appreciate you.
Absolutely. We're always looking for ways to make the Smart Family Podcast better. So thank you for doing that. Well, thanks again for joining us today. You can connect with us on Instagram and on Facebook at Smart Family Podcast. That's all one word. Or go to our website, smartfamilypodcast.com. There you'll find our show notes, which includes helpful information about each of the episodes. And hey, subscribe to the podcast as well. That way, every episode will come to you automatically into your podcast feed. And leave us a review. Again, we'd love to know what you think of this podcast. We want to make it better. We want it to serve your needs. So please do let us know.
Well, that's a wrap for today. And thank you for joining us at the Smart Family Podcast, where it's our aim to help you love being home.